we're just stepping into what liturgy is, which I love the image of jazz improvisation, because that's exactly what it is. It's art, and I often think at our best as rabbis and liturgists, we're artists, you know, this is what we're doing. We're creating pieces that mean something and become part of our fabric of how we talk about the world.
We need something which brings our voice to the music of Judaism.
Rabbling on. Rabbling on. Rabbling on.
Hello and welcome back to Rabbiting On. It is so lovely to be here with you again this week, joined as always by Rabbis Debbie Young Summers and Robin Ashworth-Steen. Lovely to be here with you both, but we've got a special guest today. We've allowed him to be the other side of the wall. You see, normally I'm just picturing him with a cup against the wall from Debbie's office, listening in, wondering what this episode is going to be about. And today we've said, Rabbi Mark Goldsmith, it's lovely to be able to welcome you onto Rabbiting On so that we can be joined with what's getting close to almost the whole clergy team at EHRS. We'll have to find other ways of inviting all your other colleagues on at different times.
Well, thank you very much, Miriam. Although I have to tell you, unusually, I'm not on the other side of the wall because I'm currently on my sabbatical, so I'm at home. The other side of the wall looks a little bit like Debbie's side of the wall, as you can see, her office and her books. Not quite like that at home, but not far off because of what I've been up to over my sabbatical.
How are you? Highlight of your sabbatical so far?
Oh, highlight. Gosh, I think it was sitting down with a young member of the staff team at the Movement for Reformed Judaism, going through the Machzor as it is now, and which I'll be talking about later, our prayer book for the High Holy Days, and then being so excited by it. It was extraordinary because there'd been so much work being done over the past 5 weeks, and they could see how they could use this for the next 40 years, but that's a topic for later.
Fabulous. Looking forward to coming back to it. Robin, Debbie, how are you? What has this week brought you since we last recorded?
This morning, for those migraine sufferers out there, I am in I've got the twinge of a migraine coming. So I've done all my steps to try and get away from a migraine. But I'm going to do highlight of my week because I like that as a question. So highlight of my week has been I've started teaching a module at Liebeck College, our rabbinic seminary in the UK, on the prophets with year three. And I am having an absolute riot. It's brilliant. We are like having transformative conversations. It's a great way to start a Thursday. So yeah, that's been really lovely. Really enjoying that.
I got a text straight after the first session to tell me how wonderful you were by my favourite student in that class. So I'd already had it hot off the press that you're amazing.
You should say it's your niece because otherwise it sounds like you're... Is that allowed?
Am I not allowed to have favourites? So they have to be related.
Yes, slightly less awkward that way.
Okay, fair
so
enough.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the others too. I love the others too.
This is fun. Who's your favourite congregant? We should do that as a round.
We could have
week.
A whole episode. Yeah. People could actually write in and suggest why they should be our favourite.
Me? Oh, I like. That's better.
Indeed.
Great.
Indeed. I love the other members of your class too, Robin. You're right. I'm just not related to them. You're right.
Yeah. Exactly.
I didn't even think who was in that class. You're right. We should cut all of this for fear of offending. Debbie, highlight of the week.
Oh, highlight of the week. I think probably last Shabbat when Gary and I were invited as a unit, as a couple, to go to the Union of Jewish Students conference, which was both exhilarating and I left feeling about 97 because people kept saying, oh, where did you go to university? I was like, oh, Lancaster. When did you go to university? 22 years ago. And just realizing kind of, wow, I've been out of uni almost just like the same time
they weren't even born. They weren't even born. How is that?
And because I did student field work in my year after university for Reform students as it was then, kind of seeing how UJS has shifted and become so much more diverse as an organization was really fascinating. Yeah, it was really, really a brilliant event and great stuff going on with UJS. I was really impressed. And also just for us as a family, so nice that we were both invited and it wasn't kind of Debbie's going off to do something and everyone else has to tag along, but kind of we were a little bit of a Gary and Debbie roadshow, which was really nice.
The Rabbonim have arrived. I like that. cool.
How about you, Miriam? What was your highlight of your week?
Oh, I don't know whether to do a work one or a not. I'll do a work one. So we've had... It's obviously on the national curriculum for this time of year, for year one, to be learning about Judaism. So we happen to have had a lot of local schools who'd all asked if their 5 and 6 year olds could come in and experience the synagogue. And so we'd done this workshop with lots of different school groups coming. But I came up with the most shocking statistic. So we've had 180 kids have come in groups of 15 to do this workshop. They were rotating around the synagogue. And in the bit with me, we were talking about like the synagogue, like the name synagogue, Judaism, rabbi. And I was trying to do like, what are the equivalents in other religions? What are other places of worship? So we were able to get to mosque, imam, Muslims, fine, church, Christians. Of 180 kids in multi-denominational non-faith schools, not a single kid knew the word priest or vicar. I was a bit like horrified. Today we had St. Mary's in, and they were much more au fait with the concept of priests and vicars. But I couldn't quite believe that of 185 and 6 year olds, no one knew the word priest or vicar. I was quite surprised. But anyway, if anyone had been at Coney Hatch Lane Tesco last night at their click and collect, there were at one point just two cars click and collecting, the Muswell Hill Chabad rabbi and me. And I just thought it was a great piece of intra-denominational moment at that. So just our different packing techniques was quite fascinating. Said everything. Anyway, should we get into some content? I'm thinking.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to have this conversation. Let's do it.
Let's think back. This time last year, we had a wonderful rabbiting on with David Jacobs, who was kind of helping us to explore this 80 years of the movement for Reform Judaism. And really, we were sort of exploring how we came about. And over this year, there have been lots of ways of sort of engaging with Reform Judaism. But as that year of anniversary celebrations draws to a close, Rabbi Rick Jacobs, the leader of the Union for Reform Judaism, our sister movement over in the United States, has shared with us his kind of message for our anniversary. And we thought we'd bring his voice to this podcast just to kick us off today.
Happy birthday, MRJ, from your siblings across the pond. You're celebrating your 80th anniversary? Well, at the URJ in just a few weeks, we will be celebrating our 150th birthday. And it turns out birthdays are perfect times, not just to appreciate how far we've come, but to look ahead to see where we're going. As it says in Pirkei Avot, know where you came from, but more importantly, know where you're going. Now, a very wise sage named Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks taught us that change is not threatening so long as we keep hold of the values by and for which we live. I believe the essence of our URJ, our reform movement in North America, is that we have always been willing to change, not randomly, not occasionally, but as a deep commitment to continuously reforming. I think of Kodak cameras that didn't adapt, didn't pay attention to everything going digital. They froze where they were, and the world just passed them by. We are not going to follow in those footsteps. No, thoughtful change is the hallmark of who we are and who we always must be. And yes, my friends, just like you, we have a shlichut. We have a sacred mission to nurture and shape a Judaism that's inspiring, that's egalitarian, learned, inclusive, demanding, at times questionable, joyful, relevant, transforming, and evolving. We are called, as you are called, to be God's partners in shaping a more just and equitable, compassionate, and joy-filled and whole world.
I love that phrasing of what it is to be reform. I quite often, when I'm out in interfaith contexts, we get called reformed Judaism.
Yeah.
And I always say to you, no, we're not reformed, because we'd be done if we were reformed. We'd be finished. It's a constant process. It's always, and actually, that's what Judaism has always been. It's always been changing and responding to the time it lives in and the world as it is, and the world as we want it to be.
I had a great hairdresser conversation, as I often do in my hairdressers, which probably will link into our conversation, Mark, more fully about liturgy and gender and all sorts of things. I came into a conversation because of the news about Church of England and gender in liturgy. So that's ridiculous, you know, God is not saying God's a he. What's next? God is a tree and all this stuff. And they kind of got quite angry. And as I'm the resident salon rabbi in that space, they said, new rabbi. I said, well, from the beginning of time, Judaism has changed and had lots of different names for God and all that kind of stuff. There's nothing new under the sun. So it's quite an interesting conversation just generally about Judaism is always about thoughtful change. It's not that reform is doing it. It's just Judaism is that. And I really like the phrase that Rabbi Rick used of thoughtful change. It's really nice. Just a good way of making sure it's kind of intentional around it.
I do love Rabbi Rick Jacobs. And when I was last at a UIJ Biennial, their kind of tagline was opening the tent, kind of making the tent as welcome as possible. I would like to be kind of, you know, the making sure that Reformed Judaism here in the UK and the URJ in the States are kind of working collaboratively, because they do have such extraordinary leadership to offer us. There's something amazing about kind of when we experience change as well, and what we take on board as being change. My niece, who's now getting a second shout out this session, came out of a liturgy class that she'd also been auditing at Leo Beck, and was fascinated by the fact that she'd been given, as if it was like such a treat, a 1977 siddur, like an old siddur. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, haven't you got them knocking around the house? They're everywhere. They're the like defunct ones. She's like, I'm sure I've never seen one before. I was like, Jessie, they were the siddur of your childhood. And then realizing that our siddur came out in 2008. I remember it well, because the first time we used it here at FRS happened to be mine and Johnny's Ufruf. And I realized, like, she was eight, so doesn't remember the siddur before. And for me, it's part of like such an important part of why this looking again at the machzor is so important, because that jarring thing, each High Holy Days, when we go back to a book that felt in its time so absolutely modern, the context was so with it, the language was so right, has been left behind because our siddur has updated our week by week language use. And therefore the machzor that we use for the High Holy Days, our prayer book for the High Holy Days, feels like it takes us back each year rather than allows us to move forward.
And it trips us up, I find. Right. You know, you're kind of expecting there to be something that's not there.
So Mark, Robin and Debbie, am I understanding that you're not on the Machzor committee? Mm-hmm. I'm not.
That's right.
I know you've got a wonderful group working with you, Mark. But I would love to hear about kind of the process, the context. Like, what Rick managed to sum up so beautifully is we don't just change for the sake of changing, but we bring about change because of those jarring moments where suddenly the world leaves us behind. And it feels like maybe the world is leaving the Machzor behind a little bit, and therefore it's time to be updated. Are you able to talk us through the sort of the conversations you've been having and where you're at with that?
Sure. Well, you talk about thoughtful change, and you also spoke about what was special about the Machzor that many of us grew up with from 1985. That was the last time we changed the Machzor. I've got a copy here. It's as you can see, it's beginning to come a little bit apart. Not too surprisingly, it's had a lot of use. Days of Awe. This was the eighth edition, actually, of Days of Awe, our High Holy Days prayer book. The first one for Reformed Judaism was in 1840. Eight times since from 1840 to 1985, thoughtful change had to happen. And it was time to update what we had in our hands on the High Holy Days, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, to help to make the day work. This 1985 edition was created by an editorial group led by Rabbi Professor Jonathan Magnet and Rabbi Lionel Blue, who had there been a rabbiting on going on in the 1980s, you can bet Lionel would have been one of the contributors for it. In fact, actually, Lionel and Jonathan would have been a wonderful combination at that time.
Jonathan would have also written a great theme tune for it.
Absolutely, and played it on the harmonica and guitar. But
I did not know that.
They created this, as you said, thoughtful change, and there was a lot in it. We had at that time to work with what was going on with the way in which people were able to talk about the Holocaust, the Shoah. And so this book really included a lot of first-person accounts from the Shoah as an important aspect of our Holy Days remembrance experience. It included much more creative prayer than had been in previous Reform Machzorim, all kinds of things. Anyway, so that's 1985. As you said, we renewed the Siddur in 2008. And by 2012, 2013, it was clear it was time to renew the Machzor, the prayer book we use for the High Holy Days. Now that, you might think, hang on, that's 10 years ago. Why haven't you been using it for the past 5 years? Well, it's taken a long time to do it. So the process is this. First of all, editors. And that's Rabbi Professor Jonathan Magnet coming back again to that role. But our new kind of liturgy head of Reform Judaism, Rabbi Paul Friedman, who we all know and love as a dear colleague, and is an extraordinary person for creating what we've got. They are the editors, the co-editors, and I was asked to be the chair of the editorial group because this is Reform Judaism. So, you know, this is not one person's fiat. This is our movement creating something. And rabbis from the Assembly of Rabbis and cantors from the Assembly of Rabbis and Cantors came to join us to create that group. And we have been working away since 2013. And now we've got...
drum roll.
I've got to show you. And it won't be this heavy when you get it. Here we go.
Imagine
the complaints. Drop the microphone. Mic drop while doing it. That wasn't intentional. Here we go. This is the current Machzor for the movement for Reform Judaism as it is. It's going to be two volumes, a Rosh Hashanah volume and a Yom Kippur volume, but much more to tell you about how it got there.
I'm so excited.
The thing that marks out, I think, our Siddurim, Machzorim from others as well, is that it's not just liturgy, that it gives you that kind of wealth of material to intersperse either as rabbis to allow us to intersperse in the services or for congregants to kind of sit and just be with. By being in two volumes, will we lose out on the study anthology?
Oh, no. There'll be a Rosh Hashanah study anthology and a Yom Kippur one. But what's going to be really special for me is that much more diversity of sources. So we've been looking at all kinds of things, which is making sure that sources are written by men and women and vastly increasing the number of women writers who we found and who we're encouraging to write. So at some point, of course, things will come through your email box saying, please, would you create a commentary on this or that or whatever it might be. Also, making sure that we're not so, if I could use the word, ashkenormative. And by ashkenormative, I mean that our sources are, as well as sort of British, American, German, Russian, also from Sephardi sources, Mizrahi sources, Israeli sources in particular, much, much more. And lots of great poetry as well as prose. So much that you can work with, we hope, let's say it would be also a cycle of 40 years before the next one for the next 40 years and know there is plenty there. But as you said, it's also going to be in the services, interspersed in the services. So when you are praying and you're feeling the meaning of this is not coming across to me, on the opposite side of many of the pages, let me find one for you here, you'll often have what we call a blue passage. And a blue passage is not what it means in some contexts, but it means that the on the other side where the prayer is something which interprets it, helps you to understand it, helps you reflect upon it, and which you might choose if you're leading a service to use instead of the traditional prayer at times. And the other thing, of course, it will do is we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah in so many Reform synagogues now, which we didn't have in 1985. So it gives you a second way through Rosh Hashanah as well, using some of those passages.
That's really interesting to hear. And it kind of, when you were mentioning the first Machzor, so shout out to the first Machzor, or the last one, or the current one, however we're calling it.
The eighth one.
The eighth one, that's better. I, as a child, remember a large part of me wanting to be a rabbi, I know it's very geeky, was through really the creative aspects of our Machzorim. And I think particularly the voice of the editors that came through and Lionel's voice that came through, which was through his passages that were interspersed and part of the liturgy. Maybe we could talk about how it is also liturgy, not separate to it in some ways, was so permissive and so different and so personal. And I found that completely liberating, really. It's always amazing to me when I'm having conversations with people that we kind of see the liturgy that we have as being so fixed and so sacred, and like there's an authenticity innate to it. And I love breaking down the idol or the idea about that to say, wait, liturgy has been changing from the beginning of time.
I love the image that comes from Rabbi Lawrence Hoffman of liturgy as jazz improvisation, that you have the themes that you must have. And in fact, often they're expressed on what we call the chatimot. So it'll say, Baruch atah Adonai, yotzeh ha-mo'orot. Blessed are you, God, who brings on the morning. But what you do before that has changed over the years. It seems that that's how it started. We have those ways of expressing Jewish concepts and what was important to us. And then we wrote and created over generations how we get up to that. What we're doing is continuing that process, both by using the prayers that have become time-honored and traditional, but also by saying, okay, when the morning comes, and who knows what that morning will be? Who knows what the weather's going to be like, what the climate's going to be like, what conditions we're going to be living in? How do we reflect on the meaning of a new day for us today? Put that alongside what's become that time-honored way of praying the rest of that prayer, and you get something very special. To speak about maybe another one that many of the listeners will be very familiar with, the prayer about our ancestors, where we thank God for having been with Abraham, Baruch Atah Adonai Magen Avraham, and we included from 2008, the Poked Sarah, God who also accompanies Sarah, because we knew that we needed to express that God's with all of our genders. And the prayer before it's become time-honored, Elohei Avraham, Elohei Yitzhak, Elohei Yaakov, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. We've now made sure we also say the God of Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. I bet that's one of the things that Debbie feels, where's that gone? When you pick up the Machzor, and you have to remember that's not there in the 1985 Machzor. That change disappears on the High Holy Days.
And that's one of those changes in the Siddur that actually, I know, you know, my mum, for example, found it really difficult to change the Amidah and to put those words in. And it took about a year to 18 months for it to start to feel normal and acceptable and comfortable again. And change is really hard for people, particularly with liturgy, because it becomes so familiar and in our hearts. And as Robin was saying, there's so much of that Lionel voice in the 1985 Machzor that, you know, I love those personal confessions where you can hear the intimacy that Lionel had with Fred, who was God to Lionel. I'm wondering if, from the Machzor Committee's perspective, what's been the most difficult change to make? Because I know when you sent out drafts, there was a lot of different kind of feedback. What do you think is the hardest thing to change for people?
I guess the hardest thing is recognizing the Shoah still matters to us, the Holocaust. Absolutely it does. But that we also need to think about what we call Kiddush Hashem, that sense of how we make God's name holy, not only by remembrance of those who have died, but by commitment to making a difference to the future. And we've always done that in Judaism. This Machzor is much more suffused by it. The different ways that we honor God's name by what we do in our lives, what we do to help other people, what we do to change the situation of our planet, if we possibly can, for better. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, the most difficult change, to recognize that we are in a slightly different phase of Judaism now than we were even 40 years ago. That's the one I think that's going to be the most interesting. And that's the one which was so exciting to the young staff member of the Movement for Reformed Judaism to see that their commitment to Tikkun Olam was now there in their machzor and what they could pledge to in their hearts on Yom Kippur. That I think is the most difficult one, but also the most exciting.
I'm wondering if the committee has talked at all about kind of other ways of presenting the machzor. So one thing that's interesting to me is how quickly things kind of become liturgy. So I cannot imagine a Kol Nidre that we don't have early on, that Franz Kafka piece, away from here, away from here, always away from here. It's like, I know there's a choice of other readings at that point, but at FRS, we always do that. And it's a much Same. Quoted piece kind of throughout the year, like that takes us back to that Kol Nidre. And I've noticed that with even the Rosh Hashanah draft, there's a beautiful piece by Justin Wise that I love about kind of never, you know, there not being enough minutes. It's like quite, you know, it's not become quite as ingrained. It hasn't been quite as long as Kafka, but I can't imagine moving past that blue text without using, you know, without making that choice because it's so powerful. It's such a brilliant piece. But I realize that part of that is kind of the layout of the printed text and the received kind of siddur in hand that we have had really since we've been able to mass produce with the printing press. Like, is there a Kodak kind of possibility of a, are we thinking that actually this needs to be a digital option? There needs to be a, we can mix this up more often than when we can afford to completely reprint and kind of everybody to be expected to buy another book?
That's been a tough issue, I think, for our editorial group, because I think we do need a machzor in our hand. So we do need to make a text which guides you through Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But what you'll find is there are places that you could then drop in new ideas as they come up. Now, for us, certainly at my synagogue at Ezra Hendon Reform, that I share the rabbinate with Rabbi Debbie and Rabbi Tanya, we often do that. We do supplements. We create them and we include them. And that's one way of doing things. In some synagogues where it's more acceptable to use video, for example, on the High Holy Days, they'll do it that way and put things up in front of people. It'll be quite straightforward to do that. We also plan to publish the Machzor in a Kindle format as well. So it will be possible for it to be digital as well, but essentially as the book that it is.
Which is also a great way of it being lighter for people who struggle to either to hold a heavy book or to flick the pages because they're often very thin. A Kindle edition can often counter both of those issues.
So I think, that's going to be possible. It's particularly possible in the Musaf service, which is, it's called the additional service, but actually it's the core service of Yom Kippur, the one that happens after the morning service and where especially this theme of what we can do that makes a difference in the world comes out so importantly on Yom Kippur. It'll be very possible to drop in new passages as they begin to appear. The exact technology we would do that with, we're not ready to go into that yet. It's not there and it changes over time. But the structure of the service you'll find is so clear, so obvious where we're going, it becomes very clear where you can do that. And you won't lose the sense of a traditional Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And Reformed Judaism still wants that alongside the innovation. To say the change is there, the change is thoughtful, though.
This idea of like what is traditional and what is innovative, I guess I want to kind of challenge those concepts because as we know, like, the traditional aspects of liturgy was also innovative and it began, you know, way back when the rabbis in their own little synagogues and places would create their own liturgy. You know, think about the end of the Amidah, there's a piece, Elohai Netzor, which we usually do in silence. And I always loved as a kid because it's written by Marbar Ravina. And my Hebrew name's Ravina, so I always felt a soft spot. But rabbis in the Talmud, it shows us that rabbis, different rabbis had different meditations they would put in at that point. And actually, if you look at the context of the one that we ended up fixing upon, it's complicated because there is a bit of misogyny in the full version of what Marbar Ravina says. But anyway, just throwing that out there. But liturgy has always shifted in that way. So the idea that it's traditional, it really only comes from the printed press, doesn't it? When kind of the one liturgy got fixed. And we have lots of great examples in the Talmud about the beginning of the Amidah, where different rabbis or prophets at different times would miss out key words of the Amidah to make a challenge of God, because they were living through such hard times. So they missed out the word God is great or God is powerful to be like, yeah, sure. Which I think is amazing. And this idea that like, we're just stepping into what liturgy is, which I love the image of jazz improvisation, because that's exactly what it is. It's art. And I often think at our best as rabbis and liturgists, we're artists, you know, this is what we're doing. We're creating pieces that mean something and become part of our fabric of how we talk about the world. And very much like Miriam, that Kafka piece, I mean, I still don't quite understand it, which is the whole point. But it's so profound, so moving. Meeting God is simple. That's one by Lionel Blue, isn't it? That's in the middle, and that I always end up choosing as well. And that also helps flavor for me the world that I live in, but also what Yom Kippur means as well. And I guess that's the richness, isn't it, of like finding those pieces that stick with us, but also realizing that we're stepping into all of this process.
It's very interesting you mentioned that Marbar Ravina piece from the Talmud Berachot, where there's a list of this rabbi finished their prayer with this, this rabbi finished their prayers with this, this rabbi finished their prayer with this. I always think the Talmud is the essential Reformed Jewish document. that, you know, that's where all of this begins, not begins in Judaism, but really confirmed in Judaism as a continual discussion, a continual questioning of how we're going to get to what God needs of this world. And what I am really loving in the Machzor is passages by the rabbis that I work with, have grown up with, are part of Reformed Judaism, our cantors as well, who are creating their own solo, in a way. It goes back to the jazz image, which is needed on an issue which matters to them, which is deeply resonant to them. You mentioned Justin Wise's piece, again, a very committed Reformed Jew. And this is his reflection on life in such a beautiful way. And I think that's also very important for a British Machzor, because one of the questions is, why don't we just buy somebody else's new Machzor from somewhere else in the world? And the reason for that is we need something which brings our voice to the music of Judaism. That's what we need. And that's what the Machzor is. That's why it's taking a long time to create it and make sure that it's done nice and thoroughly. And there are also some very special, I think, British Reformed Jewish needs. So transliteration is super helpful for many people for accessibility. And throughout the Machzor, everything in Hebrew from when it comes out is transliterated. You know, nobody should be excluded from participating in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur because they haven't got this or that skill yet.
It makes me think, actually, we spoke about some accessibility, didn't we, about the Kindle, of kind of heaviness, and also, you know, I'm guessing you could also fonts, zoom in, which would be great. Yeah, fonts and things. But we've been doing an amazing project at Manchester Reform about deaf inclusivity, and we've now, I think we're going into our second year, producer Dan's part of it, of doing services with British Sign Language interpreters. And I'm just thinking, maybe, you know, another project once the Machzor is out there, to think about putting together resources for people who use BSL as well as a way of connecting to some of the amazing pieces that are in there and images and accessibility. So that's something maybe to think about as we go forward as well. I just think this is so exciting. Like the little kind of girl inside of me and the grown-up rabbi is so excited about this. I remember when I first went into the Assembly of Rabbis and Cantors, and occasionally the Machzor committee, when it met, would be kind of open doors. I think it kind of still is, that you could just pop in, or at least that was the day that I got to go in. And I remember just thinking, wow, I get to sit around the table and make history, a bit like Chessie, third shout out. you know, I get to sit around the table and create history of like adding my voice in and the richness. I'm sure, Mark, for you, it must just feel like an absolute honor and privilege to do something like this, to work with colleagues, and to know how important this work is in reflecting the world around us and creating this piece of art.
It is lovely. And actually, that's been part of the feature of our editorial group, which has been a kind of a slightly changing group over these 10 years. It's now become pretty solid and a lovely group of people. And I think all of us do have an excitement in what we're doing. And the discussions that we have are absolutely deep to the soul of what it means to be a Jew today and what it means to feel. This is Jewish guilt. That you don't quite measure up to who you might be and the best in yourself. How can we express that in our machzor in a way that encourages us by the end of the day, the end of Yom Kippur, the end of Rosh Hashanah, at the end of Rosh Hashanah to know I want to work out what I need to change this year. At the end of Yom Kippur to say, I'm getting pretty clear. Let me now move forward. What can we do to do that? And what value should we share about that? What individual journey should somebody go on? It's been incredible to spend, well, a very good amount of time each month doing exactly that. Now my sabbatical, totally dedicated to it for many hours a day. And it's been really a beautiful experience, I think, for all of us.
One of the things that I'm excited for as well is using the machzor to be able to kind of create the ritual community moments as well. So over Rosh Hashanah for the last number of years, we've been using the Akedah as a kind of motif for benching Gomel. Kind of what does it mean to be able to have been feeling that in this last year you felt tested like Abraham, you felt physically in danger like Isaac, or you felt that you had to watch your loved ones go through such exertions like Sarah, and to invite people kind of to take their moment at the start of a year to do that. I know that there's beautiful candle rituals at the beginning of Erev Rosh Hashanah as well. I'm kind of excited. Are there other sort of ritual moments that we'll be able to find? Maybe you mentioned Musaf. I don't know if we're going to be, you know, lighting barbecues to recreate the temple smells, or whether there's, you know, there's any kind of the physical as well as the liturgical.
Yeah, so certainly a number of our shuls have been thinking about Yizkor, actually a slightly different service than the one you mentioned, and what you do with that that helps people to feel that there's a real sense of remembrance going on. So some physical rituals will be around there for that. Something else that's happened that's different since 1985 is many of our synagogues now do Tashlich, the ritual of casting away sins symbolically in a body of water. So there'll be rituals for that as well, and ideas for that, and that are there in our machzor ready to use. And when we come to Musaf, the way in which we understand ourselves alongside the ritual of remembering what once happened in the temple is accompanied by questions, accompanied by thinking about what is this for us? How does it work for us in many different aspects, which could make a pause in the service and a chance to discuss and talk with the people around you, all kinds of things like that. In a way, I think what we do as machzor creators is to give plenty of choices and jumping off points so that creative rabbis like the three of you can then pick that up over the years and think, what do we need to do with that this year? It's not full of do this, do that, do the other. It's just not the way a reform machzor works, a British reform machzor, with lots and lots of instructions. Instead, there are lots of notes to guide you as to what's going on liturgically, and there's lots of choices of ways to go through it, and there's plenty of space so that you as rabbis can create what will work best for your congregation in that place and at that time.
So I think the question that lots of people are holding on to is, when are we going to be able to enjoy this incredible new piece of liturgy?
Right. That is a very important question. This is the current plan, and I say current plan because these things change. I hope it won't, which is that this year, from now till this High Holy Days, is the process of putting it to bed, getting the last pieces written, creating the glossary, getting all the copyright permissions, getting the publication done, getting illustrations together. So if you're listening to this and you're an artist, there's an illustrations group being headed by Rabbi Colin Eimer and members of our communities commissioning and trying to find illustrations for the muscle, all of those things together, and publishing, so that hopefully there's a book ready by November 23. I put it out there so that we are ready to use it from High Holy Days 2024. We hope it's going to be a very reasonable cost so that people can afford to buy their own copies and get them ready for the day, that the music's going to be there ready for you and all kinds of things. So I'm going to go for High Holy Days 2024.
You heard it here.
So I've also heard, and I remember this process with our Siddur, that we were able to kind of make contributions financially to the publication and make dedications to loved ones. And is that going to be an option this time round as well?
Oh, absolutely. So if there is somebody you would like to see remembered in the back of the Machzor for a generation to come, absolutely you can. And that will help a lot. These are the ways we're going to be able to keep the cost down for the individual Formed You who wants to buy copies. Yes, we will. And actually, our Movement for Formed Judaism staff team are putting together a way of asking you if you'd like to do so. It could be in your name. It can be in the name of somebody that you love and you remember. It could be a group that chooses to do this and says, actually, we were there as part of Reformed Judaism, but most definitely, yes.
Information about how to do that is going to be available on the MRJ website in good time.
Absolutely.
And that's also where you can watch the full Rabbi Rick Jacobs address to us all on our 80th anniversary of the foundations of the Reform Movement, of course, which was not called that when it was established, but lots of useful stuff, as always, will be found on the MRJ website.
And wanting to wish our sister movement over in North America, Mazel Tov, and happy birthday to the URJ while they're marking their 150 years since their establishment. I don't think we can do a recording today without sharing our thoughts, our prayers, our love and urges of needing to support in financial ways as well by being able to reach out to those in Syria and Turkey who have faced such a challenging time this week and who face such uncertainties in the future. Amazing aid workers out there supporting them, but I know that they still need our help, and I hope we will continue to do that. You can always contact us here at Rabbiting On by emailing at media@rjuk.org. And a huge, huge thanks to Rabbi Mark Goldsmith for joining us for this recording. We are back in a couple of weeks and looking forward to seeing you all soon.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to be on this side of the wall for a change.
Thanks for being with us. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Rabbiting On.